Welcome everybody to Black Coffee and Theology.
Hello everyone. Welcome back to Black Coffee and Theology. I am this season's co-host, Rose J. Percy, and today we are flipping the script a little bit, and I will be interviewing the host you all know as Robert J. Monson. So welcome, Robert.
Hey, hello, hello, hello. Top of the morning to you.
Yes, I'm so excited to be able to do this, to have this conversation, and to do it in a way, I don't know, I guess like I'm excited because of who it is you are and who I've come to know you to be in the years that we've known each other. And the last time I had a chance to interview you.
Oh, snap.
And I have the exact date. Because you know I take notes.
Oh, snap.
September 26, 2001. Yeah.
So wait, not 2001.
2001. I mean, sorry, 2021. Wow.
I was about to say.
Listen. Yes, I was. What was it? I was in elementary school, and
I was like, "What are you,
Robert Monson?"
And I was still an atheist, so right? We definitely were not talking.
The conversation was a little weird. But yes, it was 2021. And so we are like almost 3 years from that time. And and I think I'm revisiting a lot of those questions that I had for you. But I think I'm revisiting them in this way where like now I've known you for almost 3 years since that conversation. And yeah, and so there are certain things we can add and season those questions with based on those experiences. So to begin, I'm going to ask my infamous first question. Who are you and who are you becoming, Robert?
I so love that you remember that, like the notes from that conversation. I was so honored when you asked me to be on your podcast. I was like, yes, I made it, mama. Let's see, who am I now? That makes me so tender. I don't remember what I said then, but I am unapologetically soft. Unapologetically me. It's funny. I was just thinking the other day that I love the skin that I'm in. And I think each year that goes by, that sits with me in different ways. Like I still think of myself as I am in training to be a man. I think that's like, so often I will like think this thought like, man, my ancestors would be so proud of the man I am becoming. And I don't know when I will feel complete with that because I'm 40 years old. I'm not a youth anymore. The grays are graying more than they ever have. But I think like each period of my life, I feel so different from the previous season that I think now I'm on the journey. Now I become an actual man. So maybe at 80, I will have reached the destination. I am soft, becoming a man. And I would say now that I am a poet. And I think I would have been remiss to say this 3 years ago. Barely a writer is what I would have said then. But like now I'm like, no, this is how I engage with the world. That's me.
Wow. Yeah, I have the questions I asked, but I don't necessarily have the answers from our last conversation. I feel like for sure you definitely did introduce yourself as being unapologetically soft. Maybe not in those exact words, but I remember those being like a strong way of identifying yourself. And it's wonderful for me to hear you identify as a poet because from like the beginning of, me getting to know you like through Twitter, I was like, this man is a poet. That's it. This man's a poet.
Can I say the difficulty for me has been comparison, right? And I typically don't do that in most areas of my life. I am like, I'm doing what I'm doing over here. I don't even think about what y'all are doing over there in like in anything. But writing has been this thing where it took decades to say I write. Not even I'm a writer. I write. And then saying I'm a poet, I just feel like I am in awe of so many people that you and I both adore and the work that is so like beautiful. And so I'm like, how can I say like Lucille Clifton, Nikki Giovanni, like Rose J. Percy, Sharifa Stevens, Robert Bronson, like those don't all go together and they don't need to go together, right? Like they each person is themselves. And but for some reason, poetry is very vulnerable. I think that that's it. And so it's been hard for me to admit that.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. And even as a poet myself, I feel like I struggle with feeling like whatever it means to be accomplished as a poet. I think that in itself
That.
is a whole world of stuff. But I think with being a poet comes like the practice, not just of writing poetry, but like seeing the world and experiencing the world poetically. And I think on some level, like when you reflect on like who you are and how you understand the world, like being a poet makes sense. And whether or not like you're publishing books and being publicly recognized as a poet, I think that's a whole other world of things. So
Yeah, you're right.
yeah, but I think that's it's a beautiful thing that you get to name that in this season and to embrace that about yourself. So yeah, I feel like for those who are new to this podcast and also new to me as a host, like they might want to know like where how we became connected and like how how this conversation, if anything, feels like act two of of so many things for us. But yes, I started this podcast called Dear Soft Black Woman back in 2021, not 2001, 2021.
Maybe it was a seed in your heart in 2001, okay?
Because if that seed was not having your softness recognized in the world, well, the seed was
Now,
planted a long
that's a
time
whole
ago. That's a whole, yeah.
podcast, y'all.
And when I started it, I had a very clear, like, womanist perspective that I wanted to honor. And that perspective was to center the stories of Black women and to create a space where we could have conversations that explored who we were and who we were becoming and the myths we were trying to like find our ways out of and into full aliveness. And as I was doing that, I was coming across your work on Twitter talking about being a soft Black man, and I was like, where does this fit in? I was just like, what is happening here? Because I gotta do something with this. I don't know what it is. And so we had a conversation, and through it, we were talking about particularly this question of like reflecting on Audre Lorde in Sister Outsider and how she's defending Black feminists. And she's saying, like, if a Black woman finds self-love and strength and a sense of empowerment in her identity as a Black feminist, why should that be seen as a threat to Black male identity? And so we had a conversation around that. And I think there are things we could talk about today that enliven that conversation a bit more. So let's get into it.
Let's get into it. Okay. Yeah. I want to say one thing as we get into it is like I encountering you on Twitter was such a balm at the time because like we have this tagline between us now that's like colleagues in softness. And I think what I was looking for at that time, I was, it was just like wisdom calling on the streets. Like, is anybody else resonating with this? Like, there were so many messages of like, get up early and grind. For men, it was like, you got to seize the day. And then at Black LLC Twitter was like, you got to invest your money. And I was like, be productive. And at that time, I was like, yo, I just want to be soft and enjoy the world and enjoy myself. So I'll say that as we get into it. But I love that you're bringing Audre Lorde front and center into this, especially because we just recently read Audre Lorde work again. So, yeah, questions, thoughts.
Yeah, so at that time we were reading Sister Outsider, and now and it's just so funny because like we didn't plan that. That wasn't planned for. But this time, like you were reading A Burst of Light and other essays, and then you said you got to read this book. So I bought it and I read it as well. And through it, I think like the quote of Audre Lorde coming to this sense of her vocation at the end of her life and saying that she wants to like have as much sweetness as she can manage and love the people that she can. Like this is a journey of embracing softness, even at, in a world that of her in her own body experiencing so much pain. And I know that some part of me trying to figure out how to navigate what I felt like was not fully womanism. And I think like, and this is something I feel like needs to be said, like so often I've seen womanism done in this way where it's like, yes, we're committed to the survival of whole, entire peoples, but like we're still working through Black women only stuff because there's so much here and we can't get there yet, but we gonna get there, but not right now. And so when you bring up other issues, you bring up intersectionalities and you bring up and even bring up like the fact that, you know, within the original definition, it says male and female. When you get beyond just like gender binaries, things start to get complicated very, very quickly. And so it often seems like when we're trying to imagine and create space for softness for all people, it just gets really hard to do. But Audre Lorde, for some reason, found a way to name that yeah, softness can benefit everyone, and we can be on that journey together. And so I'm wondering, like, how are you imagining, especially in light of the work that you are studying in your PhD program, how has womanism influenced you, and how are you working towards reimagining, I guess, like the you're reimagining what it looks like for us to claim soft identities for all Black people.
So it's funny that you asked this question. I am working on something right now, and the title of the essay is Loving the Folk in the Garden of Womanism. And my idea behind that is exactly your point. Like, it is hard because Black women need a space where they can work through their issues, their pains, their joys, their desires, right? Like how they want to move in the world. But then there's a lot of us that don't fit in there, but that really resonate with womanism and the praxis. We just need a home too, right? And so I began to think of like this analogy of there being this garden of hybrid plants. And if there's a garden, then there is more than enough space for Black men, queer people outside, outside of just the Black women. There can be non-binary plants there, hybrid plants there, and there's just more than enough space if it's a garden. But if it's a singular bowl, we not all fitting in there, even if it's a house. One of my professors calls it the womanist house of wisdom. The problem is, we can't all live in the same house, no matter how big the house is. And so it being a garden that we can all, no plant needs to be diminished in a healthy garden, right? There's room and there's nutrients for all to grow. So when I think about that and claiming soft identities, I think about enjoying the garden, right? Like there's all this richness that we can enjoy from so many parts of the human family, right? But especially Black women. And so I use, let me say it this way, like I read and study the work of Black women almost exclusively. Like I actually have to actively think outside of, so when we're in these months where it's like it's Women's History, so cite Black women, I have to so think about it intentionally. Oh, people don't do this. Actually, 98% of what I read is Black women, and I have to actively like, oh no, I need to read, this, and this from other identities. And so I think it has been helpful because Black women have given me language for questions about the divine, the ability to question religious indoctrination. And so that's helped me to be soft, so rooting it in the end of your question, which is how does this help us in our soft identities and claim that soft identity? I have needed the work of Black women to get there because, and I don't know why, like I don't know why Black women especially have like work that really allows you to be like, man, that is effed up. Like I need, so to get to the softness, I had to be able to interrogate and question and say something's not right. And lastly, what I would say is the imagination of Black women, right? So like we're given these things as binaries, and womanist scholarship has helped me, but also Black women who are just writing in literature. Like I'm reading, Their Eyes Were Watching God, and that is helping me to claim my soft identity. I'll say that way.
Wow, you just gave us so much to think about.
Yeah, I know. I was just like, there's so, as I kept talking, I was like, okay, there was like one streamlined point. I was like, oh yeah, that. Oh yeah, that. Oh yeah.
And one of the reasons why we are having this conversation is because there's this like random day where I'm just like just going about my day, and the thought came to my mind. I was like, I wonder if Robert knows I'm proud of him. And I had that thought, and I realized it was important to share. But I also realized, and I think about often, because of how you frame your work and how you narrate your life. I'm thinking particularly of your newsletter, Musing This From a Broken Heart. So often you are like recalling your grief, you're recalling your pain, you're inviting us into a space where you're contemplating like the shadows of your life. But in doing so, you're bringing so much light to so many people. And you are, and sometimes often taking that first brave step in the dark to say, am I the only one going through this? So that someone else may say, like, oh, yeah, that is me too. That is my story. And so I think when you are that kind of person, you don't often get to hear the affirmations you need. And so as you're talking about, Womanist garden being a garden of hybrid flowers. This week, as I was thinking about how I would frame this conversation, I was like thinking, I was like, this is the conversation where I give you a flower crown, basically. And I just like, I wrote, it's very simple words. Like, they don't even all, it's not even really a poem. It was just like, I'm thinking of it as like walking through my womanist garden to pick flowers. And I say, I'm picking one to make a crown for each one of my brothers. And the crown helps me see you from petals to thorns. And the flowers we pick have already begun to die. So we have to keep the garden alive. And as I wrote those words, I was thinking, and what's interesting for me is I was thinking about how my friendship with you, and that includes like the silly, funny stuff that is privileged beyond what we can share in this podcast. And then also like the public work that intersects between the both of us, is that like in getting to know you, I've been able to see my brothers differently. All of my brothers, even the ones that don't yet know, we are brothers. And the image of the flower crown is for me connected to something you said, in a conversation with some brothers who are my brothers, even though we haven't talked to each other directly yet. Trey and Sam on Three Black Men, and this was a conversation where you all were talking about James Baldwin, and James Baldwin meeting a black woman pastor, and she asked him, "Whose little boy are you?" Woo! And so when I thought about that question, I think about the flower crown as the symbol that when I envision it on a black man who I don't yet know, it reminds me to ask that question. It reminds me to see the little boy and to wonder how we are related, and but also who is that little boy related to, and what is my responsibility to him. And let me just connect that yet again to another element of conversation that we both enjoy. It's like James Baldwin talking to Nikki Giovanni.
Oh, Lord. This is a sacred text unending. What I tell
For
you,
real.
Jesus.
For real. Yes, because in so many ways, I think the friendship we have, like the intellectual friendship we have, allows us to enter a space where we can reflect on so many different things. And often that reflection is like, how do we treat each other? How does our journey together inform and deepen our humanity with one another, but also shape how you are seeing Black women in the world and how I am seeing Black men in the world. And beyond that, all Black people of all genders. But I would say for sure that one of the biggest gifts of getting to know you outside of privilege that is in itself is that it has reshaped how I think of Black men. So I guess I want you to take that crown and to wear it, and to also know that in wearing that crown, it means that there's a work still to do in the garden to make sure that there are still flowers to pick to continually give out these crowns when they need to be given. Because I think the trick of honoring you in this way is that so often, because of the patriarchy that we live within, when Black women find men who can articulate the things you articulate and live how you live, like there's a sense of scarcity that shapes our relationship to people like you. There's a sense of scarcity, and I think for me, as I invite you to respond, like I guess I want you to reflect on some of that, what it means for you to be seen in that way. How do you carry knowing that like you are someone that a lot of Black women trust and see as like, yeah, that's an example of a brother who understands, and how that responsibility feels, and is it something that you feel like you can carry in your full humanity, or are there things that you have to wrestle with and say like, that I can't do this, ladies, I can't hold it all.
Yeah, it thank you. Those words are beautiful, and I'm somebody who takes words like immensely seriously, probably too seriously. So, I'd be reflecting on things for months, and I think it does feel like a pressure because I know me, right? Like, I think. You know, the way that patriarchy has wounded us is, I don't think we'll ever have the full language for it, right? Because you have the little boys who were wounded, who didn't have an answer, whose little boy are you? And they spiraled just like James Baldwin did, right? And so then they act out in ways of outright aggression, subtle aggression, gaslighting, violence. And then there are those of us who are so wounded by that that we hide in the shadows. And we know we're not perfect. Like, nobody, like, when somebody like will tell me, "I think you're prideful." Like, is this new news to you? Because I'm aware. And so we're so there are thousands of brothers like me who are hiding in the shadows, who we are so inundated in our own like faults and flaws and inability to really like be the good man, knight in shining armor, that we feel disqualified. And meanwhile, the ones who are rising up get all of the attention, right? And so when we are given our flowers, it feel like there's a part of my flesh that's like, that's not me. You know, like if you only knew X, or if you only like, I'm not perfect, I'm trying though, right? And so patriarchy hurts those of us brothers who are trying to do the work, but we know we're not perfect too. And so it is humbling and can be overwhelming. And there's no real space for us to talk about that because we don't have a place in the not all men conversation. Neither are we, can we be fully, you know, there are these gender wars within the Black community. And so all that to say is like, it is difficult and lonely on this journey. And so hearing those words for you, I just, it pricks me because I think I wish it could be like this always for all of us, right? Like the mutual exchanging of the flowers and the tenderness, but I know it's not. And I also think about on that loneliness, someone posted the other day, a woman said, "Where are the men who are allies to women?" And I thought, this is a trick because most of the dudes, especially the brothers who's like, "I'm an ally," I'm like, "I already know you're not." You know, like if you click on the uptake, probably not, you know. But then there are those of us who are like, "Well, I don't consider myself worthy to be an ally," then we're not going to respond. So who is this post for? You know, it's a catch 22. And yeah, I think there's a lot of beauty and mutuality in your words, in you seeing us like who we are, and the ability to see that we are not all the same and that we're not all collapsed into one thing called men, right? Like, in whatever comes to your mind when you say men, there probably is pain there because the reality is men, you know, like men be menning out here. And so we know that, but it's painful when you think of the word men, how you feel pain, we feel it conversely. And yeah, that's painful.
Oh, thank you so much for sharing. And like I'm thinking about in that conversation with James Baldwin and Nikki Giovanni, how there is a desire, as they're both, you know, queer Black people talking about, like through a, there's like for on all people everywhere, there's a compulsory heterosexual narrative that like we all meant to live, like we're all meant to be in these like monogamous, family-oriented, you know, that's how we reach progress as humanity.
We have overcome.
We have overcome when husband and wife and children are happily in a home together, and they're discussing this, and they're talking about the ways in which a Black man is treated in the world, and comes home, and just as he is afraid of the violent forces on his life in the outside world, the Black woman is afraid of her husband, as well as the forces outside of that home. And she's saying, "Lie to me." She's saying, "The same way you put on a smile for the rest of the world, put a smile on for me." And I think what is so interesting about talking about softness in the way that we do in this day and age is that we are still talking about what it means to hold on to our humanity and be our true selves. And to think about rage, which is why Audre Lorde is coming to me again and telling us,
Yeah.
you know, there should be a place for that rage. And yet that place of rage shouldn't fall on hurting or acting on violence against one another. And
Ooh.
she's naming these things, naming these harms that have been done. And there's and the pain in that, there's a pain in that so I'm thinking about that, and thinking about, I guess, like who it is we get to be when instead of coming home to brutalize his wife to relieve his frustrations, that Black man gets to cry and weep in her hands and say, this is how the day went. This is how I was broken today.
Wow.
And I think that's kind of like a hope and a dream I have for, you know, what is possible when we combine, when we move in solidarity together, and to think about becoming human and staying alive and moving towards liberation, is that what we are considering feminine emotions and feminine ways of being, we can move away from thinking that way, because if anything, those were inherited from white supremacy and white patriarchal norms, and yeah, it's all nonsense.
You know, it's so you're talking real good. You're talking real good. That's talking real good, Rose J. Percy. I was thinking this as you were talking, is who gets to benefit from our softness? Like, who is it for? And, you know, I hear this cry within Nikki Giovanni as she sang Lie to Me. It actually pierces my heart, because she's essentially asking to me, why is it that everyone else gets the benefit of your soft side? Everyone gets the benefit of the good pieces of you. And I only get these quote unquote dark emotions. I only get the, you know, and so, yes, could this home be a place where there's weeping? Yes, but it reminds me, my father used to, and I say this all the time, my father, we've had a complicated history, but one thing that he used to absolutely go bananas on us for is when we would fight among the siblings. Now, it was a catch 22 because he was abusive, but stay with me, folks. He would say, you can fight anybody else in the street, with a lot of expletives, so y'all use your imagination, but you never fight anyone in your own home. And he said, this is it. This is all we got. And so, like, I think of, why is it that Nikki Giovanni couldn't behold the beauty too? And so sometimes we're so, Black men, I think, in their desire to want to be emotionally whole, like they've essentially tasked Black women with being the dumping ground. And that isn't fair. That isn't, to your point, solidarity, right? Like, so everybody else get to have the beautiful James Baldwin, who's sweet and nice and is articulate. And Nikki Giovanni got it. She said, I catch hell when you come home. That's not fair. Who's catching her hell? And so I think we have to mold that place, the home, solidarity among us, where Black women aren't. And that's the cry I hear of many Black women, as they're frustrated with Black men and like, you should be my peace. You should be my safe place. No, take that up with Jesus. You know what I'm saying? Like, Black women shouldn't only be, you know, the place that contains our wrath and our depression and our, you know. So yeah, I was thinking that.
Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah, and whew. And I guess I'm wondering, I think if anything, like sometimes when you start to talk in these ways and we start to make things abstract, we can, that's where we begin to lose the person, and we lose the embodiment and the timeline of how things move on the ground. And I guess if we're thinking about, and I'm thinking a lot about how in your writing, in the things that you put out into the world, you're often highlighting these ways that you're being soft on a daily basis. And so I let's move there. Let's move into the space where we're thinking about how, you know, your daily rhythms, you're moving in softness, because I think those matter just as much as the big abstract conversation that will take generations to resolve.
True. Yeah. Yeah. I think of my daily rhythms. How I'm moving in softness with myself. Whew, that's painful. I, you know, so what's coming up for me immediately when you said that is the reality of how often I am in physical pain. And that is, I wish that I could crack open my body so people could actually see the work that it takes for me to be soft. And one, I think I would get more accolades. Maybe some more money too. because when people see you as strong, they, and we've talked about this before, I don't want to be considered strong because y'all don't love strong people. You really don't. There's a type of strength porn where you're like, wow, you're wow, oh my, how did you do that? Oh, you're working here, you're working on your mental health, you're trying to do all this, you're working on, wow, awesome.
You're a
Oh
beast.
yeah, exactly. You're a beast. Y'all don't love beasts. I know Beauty and the Beast guy has made a lot of money, but it was a white girl and a white man who, you know, the beast transformed into the white man. So that's why y'all love it. Y'all don't actually love the beast either. But that's a different conversation. I would want people to know that because when I say soft, it is coming out of being in so much pain. And I have to do so much internal work and soft practices so that I can show up in the ways that y'all perceive. And so, something that's important to me because I'm in pain all the time, I get a massage every month. That's something I invest in. And for that hour, ooh, that made me emotional. I think for that hour in a month, I can be totally undone. I can be as weak as I need to be. Usually, like in that massage, I usually cry. I have no idea what my massage therapist thinks of me, but I cry because this is the only time where the only attention I'm getting is to make my body feel better. And it's only concentrated on me. I don't have to share it with somebody else. I don't have to say, oh, also, how are you doing? This is just all healer's hands being laid on me. And, you know, so I have practices like that that help me and aid me in being the person that I am before you. And the other thing that I would give is I try to write a few lines of poetry every day. And what that does for me is it grounds me, right? Like this day may take me however, you know, I cannot control how this day will take me. You know, like I don't know how work might trigger me, anything, but these lines are sacred to me, you know. And when I die, I hope that people will see my writing lines of poetry was part of my self-care and my soft ethic.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. Whoo, the massage part, yeah, it hits for me too. 'Cause it's like that feeling. I've cried many times getting a massage just because it just feels good to have someone attending to your pain, and to not have to do anything, just lay there and just be there and receive mending and healing. Because someone else is working and you are not working. I think that there's something to that too. I think there's something to that.
And I wish I could afford for all the people that I love and me, you know, me in that circle too, that we all could get it weekly. You know, I hate that it is a luxury. Because what you just said there is like somebody attending to you. Why should that be a luxury that you can only obtain sometimes? Like, you should have weekly reminders of that.
Yeah. And I think what you, I mean, I'm hoping what you mean in saying that, I'm pretty sure it is. Because often there's conversations about softness and the soft life on the internet, and everybody's going on expensive trips and all the candles and all the skin care treatments. And they're like, yes, hashtag soft life. It's just, and it's so materialistic. But I think what we're talking about is actual like embodied healing, because like a massage sometimes falls in the category of luxury, but for some folks, especially if you have chronic pain, It is a necessity. So, yeah.
I think one thing with the soft life, I truly agree with you. I think for me, is it let you know, we are in this capitalistic society, and what sucks is some of these things should be normal, right? Like you being able to afford lunch every week. You know, so maybe not a trip to Bali, but like do you have the groceries you need, like you desire every week? That to me is part of the soft life too. And I think I wish we lived in a world where a trip to Bali that is only accessible to some was accessible to all. And I think even when we're dreaming of a soft life, we're inhibited by these barriers. You know, I the thing I was thinking when you're talking is poverty is dehumanizing, and it breaks your spirit and your mind. And so it's hard to even imagine the candles where you're like, can't pay. You know, like when you're stressed, like I cannot pay rent, which has been so many times for me over the past couple of years, that anxiety I would not wish on anyone. It's soul crushing.
Yeah, I feel that. And I think there's something I think, like, even as you're talking, you share that example of the struggle of paying rent. Like, it's just, I don't know, it sounds natural to me hearing it come from you to be able to point to these examples of struggle in your life and to name, yeah, this is what I'm going through. But I consider the fact that, like, I grew up with a father who never did that. And yes, my father from, and I know more of his story now because something about graduating college made him relax more. Suddenly he's like, oh, I can let go and tell you now what I have had to carry to get you here, which has been really, really beautiful and sad. But he has always been a very, like, positive thinking mindset, like, never show anyone your pain, never know, like, when you struggle. Like, if he's really sick and going to the doctors all the time, he's not telling you what it was going on, like, until afterwards. He'd be like, oh yeah, I had cancer and now it's gone. And it's like, what? So
My father too. Yes.
that is what I grew up with. And I consider the first time I ever saw him cry was when he was listening to, and this is just like an MP3 of me preaching during college. In my first sermon, like my I had to I preached for our chapel services, and I talked about Hagar, and I talked about you already know. So you, but yes, talk about
Yeah,
Hagar.
I know you tore that sermon up.
A lot of that sermon was an invitation for people to share their isolating pain and to say, like, to let themselves be seen, but to also name in that environment. I named that as I was praying the sermon. I asked people who if they would be willing to share, and then once I heard from them whether or not they could share, I realized, wait a minute, now everybody is sh safe to share their struggle here. So that was the context of the sermon. But as my dad was listening to it, he was weeping. And like, it was like, not only is my first time seeing him cry ever, but I'm seeing him cry, but I'm hearing him audibly weep. And that's when he told me, like, his story and of like growing up in Haiti and like the things that the identities he put on, the images of authority, the ways of carrying himself that he put on in order to succeed and to become someone who could be respected. And so when I think about Black men and some of the armors that I've seen them wear in order to show up in a world where they're protecting that little boy,
Ooh.
so, protecting him from harm through the armors they put on. I consider how, like, so often it's been hard. I think it's hard for folks to, like you said, you don't we don't really care about strong people. We tend to want to instrumentalize a strength, but I think a strength that you have is to is like you're showing up in the world without that armor. And you're also saying, "I here I am. Am I okay to fall here? Can I lay down?" Can you hold me? Like, and that all of those things is a way of being strong. I think sometimes folks are trying to find language for, I say trying to understand who it is you are and how you show up in the world. Like here you are, and just like you're not wearing a suit and tie and like, I mean, and I laugh, but like consider just, you know, in the history of in Black America, like there's a image of like the of Booker T. Washington with the suit, and
Yes.
there's this it's an image of upward mobility, success, Black excellence.
The aesthetic of the black male upward mobility.
And so to become the kind of person, and this is the invitation I have to those who are listening, to those who subscribe to your work and those who are following, is to know that in order for you to be the way you are, you need your people and you need your community. Because the only way you can continue to show up in your full humanity without that tr armor that we're so used to seeing traditionally, you're going to need a village to sustain you and to literally lay hands, as they say in the church, lay hands on you, hold this brother up. Because like I think at the end of the day, like if you're going to keep showing up in your full humanity the way that you are, your community is going to have to be your armor.
Yeah, two images of Robert came to my mind when you mentioned Booker T. Washington. One, there's overweight, chubby 7-year-old Robert, and I'm going somewhere with this. The first book that I ever wrote was when I was 7, 8 years old, and I put together this little book about the desert. I don't know what came over me. I just was like coloring and writing. And then I glued all these pages together and it was about the desert. And the thesis of the book was if you go to the desert for any amount of time, you will die. And I remember giving my teacher the book and she was like, oh, Robert, I've been to the desert. You know, but anyways, all that to say is like, the man that I am now is I am embodying that younger Robert, right? Like, I don't know what came into his young mind to think that he was a writer. No one gave that to me. I don't know why I thought that I could do that. And I just published my own little book right there, you know? And then the other one is an image from therapy. And one time my therapist asked me, you know, like, what do you see for your life? And I told him, I see, you know, myself in this boat, you know, and cultivating peace, you know, just, and he was a white man. And he was like, oh, okay. So as you're growing, you probably want to add more things in the boat, like people and responsibilities. And he was like, oh, okay, I see the image. And I was like, no, not at all. I said, if anything, my whole life, I've been in a boat with everything that people have put in there, their expectations of me, their desires of what I'm supposed to be like, how I'm supposed to be not feminine, you know, to your earlier thing. And my greatest desire before I die is that there's nothing in that boat but me. And so that is a different armor. That's a different, you know, to so I would appreciate your reflection of like, this is just who I am. I just want to be in this boat, recognized just for who I am, not for what you desire for me.
Whew. I think that is a thought that we could end on for sure. The last thing I will share as another piece of this flower crown and another piece that that stands in, I guess, like as a result of the meeting of our work together. Because I remember a couple years ago, after some heartbreak that I've experienced in friendships with Black men, you asked me the question, like, in the table that you're building, in the world that you want to see Black women liberated and free, are Black men there? And I remember thinking at that time, I was like, no, I don't have a vision. I don't have a place at that table for Black men, and I don't know how to build that place. And so I had to dig into my imagination, and begin to move towards finding out how to do that. And so I guess I will end with this affirmation, because it came from that conversation and it came from the beginning of realizing, wait a minute, something is missing here. And for this womanist garden to continue to grow, to be all has to be, got to start making these flower crowns and giving them out so that we can help see the little boy that is in these Black men that we have in our communities. And so this is my gift to you, Robert. Thank you for being who you are. And this is an affirmation for the soft Black man. Smile and let the joy leak out from the sides of your eyes. There is light enough here for you to be seen, held, and loved. Here is a place made with you in mind, with you to be reminded that softness was always yours to claim. Cry and let the grief leak out from the sides of your eyes. There is darkness enough here for you to rest and be relieved that you will not be left behind. Laugh and let the fight go. Laugh and let the love grow. Laugh and let the world know the melodies of your hard-won song, the one your heart sings when you remember you have always belonged.
Thank you, Rose. Appreciate you.
Likewise, brother.
Black Coffee and Theology Pod is a production of Three Black Men, the podcast about theology, culture, and the world around us. Follow us on Twitter at Three Black Men. If you like the content that you are receiving here and want to receive more, whether that is in longer conversations, essays, devotions, and videos from either myself, Sam, or Trey, please sign up for our Patreon at patreon.com/threeblackmen. Don't forget to like, rate, and review Black Coffee and Theology Pod, as well as Three Black Men.